Good afternoon, and welcome to Jays Talk Plus. A tough couple of days around the Toronto Blue Jays. I'm Blake Murphy, by the way, and I am, of course, talking about Bradley Zimmer being designated for assignment. One of the all-time great statistical oddity Blue Jays. If this is it for him, 87 plate appearances in 75 games he got into. The second lowest rate in Jays franchise history in terms of, I mean, I could put a stat name on it, but it's basically how little did they trust you at the bat, at the plate, but need you in the field or on the bases. 87 plate appearances over 75 games, and he lasted 4.5 months. He's done because George Springer's coming back. It's a tiny bit of reason for optimism. Let's pocket the optimism for right now. Because last week was bad. And the weekend, including Sunday's game, did not leave Blue Jays fans in the best and most optimistic of spirits. Jays went 1-4 last week, had a rain out, had an off day. At the dish over the last 2 weeks, they've been just the 23rd best offense in baseball. That's going to happen sometimes over 2 week stretches, but when your starters also aren't pitching well, and this is a team that when it's been hot this year is very offense driven, except for the top two guys in the rotation, you're just not going to survive that. You can't have a sub 300 OBP for an extended stretch in the middle of a playoff race and feel good about things. So they drop 2 of 3 on the weekend. They dropped 4 of 5 last week. You look at the wild card standings. Somehow they're still hanging on to that top spot. That was partially because Seattle dropped a pair. It was partially because Tampa and Baltimore played against each other and split the series 2-1 Tampa Bay. Baltimore nearly getting, actually both sides of that almost getting no hit or perfect game. Friday night, Austin Voth taking one deep against the Rays, and then Drew Rasmussen taking one deep yesterday. The way the standings look after the weekend is in contrast to how it feels around the Blue Jays right now. The Jays are 61-52. It's the third best record in the American League still, the third best run differential, etc. Everything in the macro suggests the Jays have still been the third best team in the American League. They've dropped 7-10. They dropped 4 or 5 last week. Their lead as the top wild card spot. They're now just half a game up on Seattle, just one game up on Tampa Bay, and just 2.5 games up on Baltimore, who are the last team out right now. They'd also be 3 games up on Minnesota and Chicago, who are also in the race. Things have gotten very, very compressed. If you include Cleveland, who lead the AL Central, that's 7 teams all within 3 games of each other for what will be 1 division crown and 3 wild card spots. There is no breathing room. The margin for error has been extinguished. You've used it up. There was one, and now it's gone. The Jays have 13 games left against Baltimore, including 3 that they're going to get into tonight. 7:07 first pitch, Ben Wagner and Arden Zwelling on the call for you on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We're going to spend the show teeing up that series, get into some of the pitching matchups, although it should be familiar because the Jays just saw them and they're going to see them a million times down the stretch. First, we're going to be joined by a name I just said, color commentary next to Ben Wagner tonight and tomorrow of Sportsnet, of At the Letters, Arden Zwelling. How are you, man?
Ben, sorry, Blake. What's happening?
I take offense to that, but you've got like a 70% chance of being right if you just call everyone at Sportsnet Ben, so I don't blame you.
It's up to you to think of which one I confused you with.
Yeah, I would think Ennis on voice, but Wagner on, you're working with him tonight and you probably have him on the mind.
Don't forget Nicholson Smith as well.
Yeah, the big birthday boy on the weekend, working on his birthday, grinding away. What one of us, Arden, as it were.
What's going on, man?
Man, I wish there was happier stuff to talk about. Let's get the negatives out of the way before we talk about the one nice piece of news that just came down in that George Springer's coming back. as far as teams who are 61 and 52 and are holding on to the top wildcard spot go, this feels like a bad energy or just kind of a bad feel around the team. Maybe it's the fan base projecting, but this doesn't feel like a team that is in a really good position right now, despite what the standings say. Is that fair to say?
Like, I feel like they were a little listless on the weekend. Maybe that's putting it lightly. Like, there wasn't a ton of energy coming from the Blue Jays in those games. But I also think they're just going through something that every team goes through, right? You ebb and you flow. I don't think that it's that strange that the Blue Jays have hit sort of a rudderless stretch like this here in the middle of August, classically the dog days of the MLB season, when everybody is tired and mentally drained and it's hard to get up for games. I think a lot of teams are going through it right now, and I think that a lot of teams have been through it. Like, you look at the American League, who's playing well since the All-Star break? Houston and Cleveland and Baltimore have been, I guess. Outside of them, the teams in the American League they're battling for these wild card spots have all been pretty mediocre. They've all been around 500 or a little bit below, or in the case of the Yankees, like 8 games below 500 since the All-Star break. So I think every team just goes through these ebbs and these flows and these peaks and these valleys, and in the end, it all kind of comes out in the wash, and you get something meaningful in the aggregate. But I don't think the Blue Jays fans need to be too down. I think their team's just going through something that a lot of teams go through.
Is it at least a little concerning that this is not that far removed from the last time this happened and the manager was changed? Like, I'm with you. These ebbs and flows absolutely happen. It's 162 games. Even if you're a good team, you flip the coin enough times and you're going to have a run of, you know, five or six heads or tails in a row. It just kind of happens. But we are not too far removed from the last time we went through this and did the concern index and had these discussions, and they've kind of hit they're already past the two buttons you can press to steer out of that, and that's manager change and trade deadline. Does it concern you at all that it doesn't feel like that long ago that we were right here as well?
I mean, it wasn't that long ago that they won like 8 in a row, right?
Yeah,
it wasn't
that's
that long
true.
Ago that they won, yeah, weren't they like 10 of 12 around the All-Star break?
But Arden, you know how this works. If you lost the last game, only your earlier losses matter.
I just think that if we sort of look at the forest and not the trees, it's a top five offense in MLB. It's sort of middle of the pack pitching staff, really, that hasn't been as good as I believe that it could be, but also hasn't been putrid. It's had some pretty good performances, and it's like an above average defense, really. This weekend, notwithstanding, some pretty porous defense played by the Blue Jays, but in the aggregate, over the course of the season, I mean, pick your metric, and the Blue Jays are an above-average defensive club. So I still believe they're a playoff team. Factually, they are still a playoff team. Literally, they are first in the wild card race. They are first of three wild card teams. I'm pretty sure they still have the third best record in the American League.
Yep.
I don't know, man. I'm too detached and not emotional about it. But I don't really think the sky is falling.
No, I mean, look, detached and unemotional is a helpful way to be over the course of a very long baseball season, right? And I mean, you're familiar with my basketball stuff, the joke that Kareen and I ended up being the Raptors reasonablists after a certain amount of time, because that was kind of the job. And it's more so the job when the expectations are so high, right? Because, like, look at this season right now compared to last season. They're doing better this year, but it feels like they're a worse team. So, Arden, this is why I bring you on. This is why I appreciate your work so much. So don't worry at all about being, too reasonable. That's not a thing you can be.
Yeah, I mean, look, the Blue Jays have to play better, certainly. They have to figure out some things in their rotation. You say Kikuchi's going to pitch tonight, and, like, let me know if you have any idea what you're about to get from Yusei Kikuchi. Like, he could go 6 shutout, and I'd believe it. He could not get out of the first inning, and I'd believe it, right? Like, the entire spectrum of outcomes is always on the table for that guy. Jose Berríos's inconsistency this year is well-documented and concerning, right? I mean, it was one thing in spring training when he was kind of giving up laser beams, and he came out and told us, well, I'm just working on some stuff. And we said, okay, look, you've been one of the most consistent starters for 5-6 years now, and in MLB, we believe you. And there's another thing, when on opening day, he got lit up, and it was, it's opening day, routines are thrown off, this, that, and the other. But it's now another thing when we're into August and it's still happening. He keeps regressing every time he tries to, he seems to figure it out and put his season back on the rails. So that's something the Blue Jays need to sort out. It's a bullpen where you need to figure out who you're going to trust and leverage, like really, really trust and leverage down the stretch in September and into October. And it's a lineup that, you know, sort of fluctuates at times, right? Like, sometimes you see this batting order really go off and you think, wow, like, this team is unstoppable. This offense is incredible. And then there's sometimes where a very average right-hander rolls in with, like, a 92-mile-an-hour sinker and a slider and dominates them. And that can be a little bit maddening at times. And it was interesting to hear John Schneider over the weekend twice talk about how the Blue Jays could use a shift in approach second trip through against that type profile pitcher and that type of guy who had given them fits at times this year. It's not something we heard from Charlie Montoyo, and typically, you know, the approach is to stick with your approach and to not change things and to trust the process. So I did think it was kind of interesting to hear Josh Snyder come out and say, yeah, maybe sometimes we actually do need to approach, you know, change our approach in games and try to do some different things as a lineup in order to get to some of these guys who are giving us fits.
Yeah, and I think that fans would probably be happy to hear that, because that's one of the most consistent, you know, questions I get in the text line or on Twitter or whatever is the approach-based ones, especially when, you know, there does seem to be this class of pitcher. And, hey, Baltimore's flush with them that, you know, they don't blow this lineup away. They just kind of trick them or nickel and dime them or out-game plan them or whatever. I want to ask you two Schneider related questions from the weekend. I don't want to do too much of the manager nitpick, but I'm curious your take on it. Sunday, it seemed like they went with an offense first lineup to try to get to Bieber because you knew offense was going to be at a premium that day. But did he get asked at all, or do you have any insight into the way they decided to deploy Tapia, Merrifield, Biggio, with Biggio in right, Merrifield at second, Tapia in center, instead of the other iteration of that could have been? Because I get the offense first lineup against Bieber, but I was a little surprised that that's how they rolled out the defense.
Yeah, no, it stuck out to me as well, and I wasn't there on Sunday, so I'm not sure if anybody asked him or what the sort of reasoning was behind that. I'm sure there was a reason that, you know, it could have been load management, right? The Blue Jays are in a stretch here where they don't have an off day for a little bit, and clearly, as we were talking about earlier, it is the dog days, and it's a time of year where legs are heavy, and even just mentally the season is really wearing on a lot of players. So that could have been part of it. But yeah, I don't have a straight answer for you on that front. All I know is the Blue Jays were not shy on outfielders and potential alignments on Sunday.
So the other one came from Friday's game. And if I were ranking the things that stood out to me from Friday's game, number one, getting to see you. Number two, Ben Nicholson-Smith hiding that it was his birthday and he was on the call. And number three was that bad start, big hole early, and they went through five bullpen arms, five guys doing one inning at a time. I know they just had 2 days off, but did that surprise you at all? Because it feels like now, even though you got the kind of unexpected fortune of 2 days off last week, your bullpen's now right back to being a little taxed.
So I do have an answer on that one, and that decision was made in order to keep guys fresh.
Okay.
So it is what you are alluding to, that the Blue Jays figured we'd rather actually get guys in games, pitching, exerting themselves, throwing high-intensity pitches, high-intensity repetitions. This is something that we want right now. I would have sided with you, honestly, and I had the same questions of, like, why are we not seeing Trent Thornton for two innings, Trevor Richards for two innings, and then, like, David Phelps for one? And that's not what happened. It ended up being Simber in that game and Zach Pop in that game, and sort of one inning each. And the Blue Jays did that because they wanted to keep guys fresh. And that's always kind of the debate, is the rest versus rust thing. And clearly the Blue Jays decided to try to avoid the rust rather than prioritize the rest. I probably would have done it differently myself, but I also don't have access to all the information that the Blue Jays do, and they make these decisions professionally. So that's why they did it.
All right. So looking ahead to this week, bullpen is what it is probably for today and tomorrow. Something's got to give Wednesday when Ross Stripling comes off the IL to make that start. Would you expect that to be Thornton with Mitch White moving into kind of the bulk role in the bullpen, or are we going to see something a little less obvious here?
There's options. They could go the six-man route. I wonder what, if Yusei Kikuchi's outcome tonight has a say on it. I mean, if he's absolutely putrid, right? I mean, if he comes out and walks three in the first inning and hits a dude and is, or, you know, gets into the second inning and he's throwing his 65th pitch or something like that, like, that could change things as well. I think there's options for the Blue Jays. I don't even know they, you know, I know they have several plans and game plans and, you know, avenues they could go down. They're going to kind of let some more information roll in here on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday against the Orioles before really making a final decision. So, yeah, it could be just Mitch White back to the bullpen and Ritz Rostripling takes his spot. I think that the Yusei Kikuchi to bullpen option is a lot more possible now than it was earlier in the season. I think that is something that the Blue Jays would consider if it came to that. I think their ideal scenario is that Yusei Kikuchi goes out tonight and is like two runs over five innings, and they are like, okay, you get to make your next start. You're all good. Let's move Mitch White into the bullpen because he's done that this year. And he can provide some length out there, and it wouldn't be that hard for him to jump back to the rotation. For him, fluctuating between roles is not that much of a challenge. Whereas for Yusei Kikuchi, once you move him to the bullpen, that's kind of a final move for this season. Obviously, you could build him back up next year, but I don't think you're going to be flip-flopping him back and forth between roles like you would with a White or like the Blue Jays did with Stripling earlier this year. So, you know, there's kind of the path of least resistance there, certainly. But then again, I mean, if Yusei Kikuchi is just unstartable. I mean, if it is a situation where he is again putting you in a terrible hole and just submarining your ability to win a ball game, you might have to make a more difficult decision just depending on those circumstances.
You might. And, you know, Mitch White has looked okay in his two starts. This is probably a better question for you before his last start when your article on him came out. But that was a really interesting read over at sportsnet.ca about, you know, Mitch. First of all, the story he told you about when he decided to change the slider up after it was getting hammered when he was in LA was a good one. But it's an interesting story because it seems like the impression I got from the whole of your piece was the Jays really think they could turn Mitch White into something with some tweaks and some adjustments, but for this year, maybe he is what he is. Is that a fair takeaway from your piece? And if that is the case, you know, what is Mitch White? Do you like this version of Mitch White as a guy who could go five innings every so often?
That's a perfect read because the Blue Jays, the way they approach it when a new starter comes in mid-season, even a new reliever, is just keep doing what you're doing. Like, whatever you've been working on and trying to slow down, like, be you and do your thing. And then if we have some ideas for you down the road, we can talk about it and we can, tackle that when circumstances are more optimal than, oh, you just got to a new city and a new team and you're thrust into a rotation and that team's in a playoff race and you need to perform every 5 days. Like, that's not the time to be tinkering and making adjustments. So for Mitch White, like, the Blue Jays do think that the slider can play better against lefties than it has earlier in his career. And it was actually kind of interesting to see him in that outing using the slider back foot to lefties a few times and getting some, like, pretty good swing and miss on it against some pretty decent hitters because, you know, Cleveland stacked lefties in that lineup against him, and obviously they got a few switch hitters in there as well to make some more challenging. So I thought that was a kind of interesting thing to see from him. But some of the bigger stuff the Blue Jays will be doing with him, I think the change up is a pitch they think can, like, really be more of a weapon for Mitch White than it has been in the past. I think curveball shape is something that they're going to look to address, and that'll all be sort of next spring training. For now, they want Mitch White to continue doing what he's been doing to this point. And look, if that means it's only two trips through and four or five innings and two runs allowed, that's fine. I think you'll take that if you're the Blue Jays. You don't need Mitch White to be your, you know, Kevin Gausman or Alec Manoa going through seven, eight innings, three trips through the order guy. So I think the Blue Jays believe there is some upside there. And Mitch White, as you said in the piece, I kind of went over some of the adjustments and tweaks that he has made recently, and I think there's still more to come. I don't think this is the finished product. The Blue Jays believe there's still some development to come with him.
Yeah, that was honestly what I came away with on deadline day, looking through some of his Statcast stuff. And obviously, I'm not the expert to the level of the Blue Jays, but it did strike me that, you know, there's more there. You're just gonna have to take some time with it. Let's do a little bit of optimism here, Arden. George Springer has been reinstated off the IL. Do you want to pour one out for Bradley Zimmer first or go right into the Springer stuff?
I'd be interested to hear your take on it. Did you think it was kind of interesting that Bradley Zimmer was DFA'd like 15 days before rosters expand, 16 days maybe, and the Blue Jays could have gotten him through that stretch perhaps with the next strain or something else? They didn't need a 40-man spot for Springer. Did you think the Zimmer DFA was interesting?
Yeah, it was. And I thought when they optioned Collins instead of the Zimmer DFA, when they added Jackie Bradley Jr., that's what I thought was... Like that to me telegraphed they're going to try to maintain as much org depth in the outfield as possible down the stretch here. But yeah, I guess, you know, I was a little surprised at the Jackie Bradley Jr. thing anyway, given just like what we've seen from him. But I'm my read on it, I guess, is that they still really believe Jackie Bradley Jr. can be a plus center fielder, which certainly eye test wise, yes, even if the metrics the last couple of years don't love him quite as much as they did before.
Yeah, I think that's the one read of this move, is that the Blue Jays are saying Jackie Bradley Jr. is going to give us the defense and the speed that Bradley Zimmer was giving us and a little bit more at the plate. And I just, with what we have available publicly, and I know you know this, like sprint speed wise and like defensive metrics wise, they would suggest Zimmer's the better guy on the base paths and in the field. And the Blue Jays, it seems, disagree or just like really value the increase in plate approach, like the better at bat that they are going to get from Jackie Bradley Jr., the not striking out on three or four pitches, but maybe hitting a fly ball after five or six pitches or maybe even drawing a walk. It seems like they value, you know, they will take that even if it is a slight downgrade in speed and defense. I don't know. It just happened. I got to ask around, but that would be my read on it. Initially, because look, you could have just found a neck strain or a calf strain for Bradley Zimmer, put him on the IL for 50 days. You can still hang around the team, you still travel with us, you're getting your big league pay and your service time and all that. Rosters expand in September. That's when Bradley Zimmer is most valuable down the stretch in September. Like, that's when a late game speed guy can steal you a base late in the game. Alejandro Kirk reaches first when you're down one in the ninth inning at Fenway Park or wherever you are, and you bring him in to try to steal a base to get the scoring position, that's when that's most valuable. Or the defense that Bradley Zimmer would bring as well in the outfield. So, and even like think about it in the postseason as well, when you're not carrying five starters. So you have more room for that defensive specialist, that speed specialist on your bench. That's when the utility for Bradley Zimmer is just most impactful. And the Blue Jays carried this guy for like 4.5 months. Here they are DFAing him right before you're about to get to the good part with him. So to me, that just says that they think that Jackie Bradley Jr. can do what Bradley Zimmer was doing, and they really do value what he's going to give them at the plate a bit more.
All right, so Springer is in then, which is the headline item here. Minimum IL stint for him. I guess we have to take that as a good sign. Arden, I'd imagine... We have a lot of DH days and load management still ahead, though, right?
100%. I would bet you that he is not playing center field in this series. Maybe. I could be wrong. But I think it's going to be a lot of DH days to begin with. And the Blue Jays are really going to ease him back in. They're going to prioritize having George. Because, look, there's going to be a time when George Springer has to play every day, no matter how he feels. And that is going to be late September and into October. So right now, you can take it easy and you can load manage and you can give him like the, you know, just his four plate appearances, and maybe you pinch hit for him late if it's a blowout in either direction. Maybe you start him in right field, although I don't know if there's like that much of a difference in work capacity and volume between right and center. I would think it would be more so on your legs than on your arm, right?
It's more because all the dives Springer does when he's in center field, I think.
Yeah, I mean, one thing about George Springer, he could be playing catcher. He's going to find a reason to dive, right? Like, he's going to find a reason to lay out.
Have you ever done it? It's very, very fun. There are very few sports things I've experienced that feel as good as a diving catch, so I don't blame him at all.
On turf?
Well, I haven't done it on turf. I'm an amateur here, Harden.
So, I think that, you know, I don't think you're going to see George Springer in center field anytime soon. But we'll see, man. We'll see. They have to get him to a place where he is able to play every day towards the end of September. Because that's when it's like really crunch time, really these wins matter. We are talking about whether you're in the first or second wild card team here. You need George Springer's impact atop that lineup. And that's also the point where, and this has been true of George Springer, like throughout this thing, is he's pushing to play and he wants to play and he's pissed off when he's not playing. And at that point, it's going to be harder to tell him no, because just of what's going to be on the line with the season at that point. So I think, you know, the 10 days, it gave time for those anti-inflammatories, Matt Cortisone, to do his job in his elbow, and for him to kind of get over that shot, because it is a substantial needle when you're getting those. Like, that's not a COVID vaccine needle. Like, that's the big one, you know. And it does, it does take some time to get over that. And clearly he's feeling well enough to be back on the active roster and play a role. So it'll be interesting to see what the usage is.
Last one for you before we let you go, Arden. And this is more of an inside journalism question. You're on the call tonight and tomorrow with Ben Wagner on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Having just seen the Orioles and the million Orioles games still ahead, is this about as easy as the prep gets for a series?
I guess so. Yeah. I don't know. I'll do the same preparation no matter what, if they're playing the Baltimore Orioles or they're playing the Tuscaloosa Mudheads, you know, like I'll do the same.
I don't believe you there. I think if they were playing the Tuscaloosa Mudheads, you'd have to do a lot more research. I just don't think, you know, the stat cast and stuff like that, you'd have to get in the lab and do the video work like it's the NBA side.
I'm definitely more familiar now with Felix Bautista and Dylan Tate and Brian Baker and Keegan Aiken than maybe I was a few months ago. I'll give you that.
Yeah, get your Austin Voth research in. Arden Zwelling, thanks so much for taking the time out, man, and have a great call tonight.
Thanks, Blake. Take it easy.
Arden Zwelling of the At the Letters podcast of Sportsnet.ca. And again, he'll be on the call with Ben Wagner tonight on the Sportsnet Radio Network. First pitch goes 7:07 as you say Kikuchi takes on Kyle Bradish. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to flip to the other team's radio. We're going to talk to the play-by-play voice of Orioles Radio Network, Jeff Arnold. Poor Bradley Zimmer. We'll sprinkle in some Zimmer stuff throughout the day. He's a part of some very interesting Jays clubs now, if this is it for his Blue Jays tenure. I don't know. Maybe the Baltimore Orioles have a... Well, they do have a Bradley Zimmer of their own. They have Brett Phillips now, which is huge. So yesterday I'm watching this Drew Rasmussen perfect game bid, and I just couldn't help think that the perfect way for it to end, if it had to end, would have been Brett Phillips, the most beloved Tampa Bay Rays guy who can't hit a lick, getting it done for the Orioles in the ninth. Didn't happen that way. Jorge Mateo broke it up anyway. Could have been cool. Let's take a break. Let's talk to Jeff Arnold from the Orioles Radio Network next on Jays Talk Plus on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Everything you need to know about the Blue Jays, Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. I'm Blake Murphy. We got a Blue Jays lineup. We'll get to that in a little bit, but George Springer is back at the top of it as the designated hitter, as we just spoke with Arden Zwelling about. There is a sense that George Springer is back, but will not be playing center field very much in the next little bit as they continue to monitor and manage his elbow issue. That's not ideal, but it's also better than no George Springer at all, because you've seen what that looks like the last little bit, and it's an offense that's really struggling. That offense has struggled in part because they keep running into the Baltimore Orioles, who are pretty good. Joining us now to get the Orioles side of things, the play-by-play voice for the Orioles on the Orioles Radio Network, Jeff Arnold. Jeff, how are you?
Blake, how's it going?
I am well. I got a big journalistic question for you to start things off.
Okay.
Yesterday, the O's are getting perfect gamed, and in the ninth, Jorge Mateo breaks it up. You, as a radio voice, as a journalist, are you happy for Mateo and the Orioles, or when it was that close, disappointed you don't get the call perfect game?
Well, I'll say this, Blake. Last year I did John Means' no-hitter against the Seattle Mariners, and that was about as close to a perfect game as you can get. There was a strikeout wild pitch thrown in there, And yeah, it was as close as a perfect game as we've seen. And it was one of the best games that I have seen. So given the fact that the Orioles had been no hit, I think, 7 times in their history before, but had never suffered a perfect game, I was very happy to see Jorge Mateo on the first pitch double down the line. So I actually was kind of happy that he was able to break it up. Nobody wants that. And especially nobody wants that when they're going into a series against the Blue Jays and have a lot of really important games coming up.
Yeah, and a lot of games against the Blue Jays, just period. Mm-hmm. 13 more left against the Jays. I'm curious. I know that they haven't seen a ton of each other just yet, and most of the games are ahead. But having gotten a look at the Jays a couple times now and heading into this stretch run, has anything surprised you about the Jays or how they've played against the Orioles relative to what you were expecting?
I mean, I think that last year against the Blue Jays, I mean, I think there was kind of a sense of doom, like the Blue Jays are coming to town or the Orioles have to go to Toronto just because of what their offense could do. But this year, for a number of different reasons, it feels like the games have been a lot more competitive. And the pitching has been, I think, for the Orioles a lot better. It's not the group that's nibbling around the corners anymore and getting into bad counts with Vladimir Guerrero up at the plate, and suddenly you got 2 men on base and he hits the 3-run homer. I mean, we're seeing a lot less of that. And I think that the other thing that's maybe that I've noticed about Toronto is that the bullpen hasn't been nearly as good as it was a year ago. And I think the Orioles, when they saw them last time, you know, offensively, outside of, you know, the 6th inning where they scored 4 times and Bichette hit his 2nd home run, the offense hasn't quite looked the same. I mean, the first game that the Orioles and Blue Jays played against each other this year, the offense was very reminiscent of what it was a year ago. But, you know, it's just, I think the thing about Toronto is that even though, you know, they're having their struggles offensively this month, you know they can break out at any time. And you know if you make a mistake, then they can make you pay for it. And so I think that, you know, it's the same group, and they're kind of lying in the weeds, and they're very dangerous. And, you know, given how many games, as you said, that the Orioles and Blue Jays have against each other the rest of the season, I mean, I think Orioles pitching needs to proceed the same way they already have. They got to execute pitches, and they got to get in good counts, and hopefully they can do that and take some games against Toronto, because they're going to need to if they're going to end up getting to the playoffs.
Big time. And you mentioned the, you know, the one outburst the Jays had, that 11-run game earlier in the year, but Baltimore's held them to 5 or fewer 4 of the 6 times they played against each other. There was an interesting quote from Blue Jays interim manager John Schneider on the weekend, and it was, I'm going to paraphrase here, but basically the Jays have had some trouble with pitchers who aren't elite, the type of pitcher maybe you look at on paper and you think that's going to be a good offense day. And John Schneider mentioned that the Jays haven't done a good enough job changing their approach as they see a guy for a second time, either through the order or the second time they see a guy, the second start against him. What do you think it is about the Orioles pitchers that makes them adept at that? Because it does seem like, even though there's not, you know, elite strikeout stuff in this staff, it's a pretty well-prepared staff. It's a pretty good, those guys go up there with a good idea of how to attack teams. Is that just who these guys are? Is there a real value to this pitching coaching staff and strategy staff? Why are the Orioles so, again, small-ish sample, but why do they seem so adept to kind of exploit that weakness the Jays have?
I think they made a number of adjustments this year, and I think that it has shown up in guys like Spencer Watkins and Austin Both, who came over from the Nationals after he was really struggling, turn his season around completely. And then with some of the younger guys that the Orioles have, I mean, Kyle Bradish is going to start tonight. I mean, he's relatively new to the major leagues and his electric stuff. So I think for some pitchers, it's a difference in stuff. I think that, you know, after last year, there were some changes that were made in terms of, you know, Darren Holmes, who was the other pitching coach that we have, you know, Chris Holt is the pitching coach and the director of pitching. But kind of having Darren Holmes moved into the dugout, I think that has made a big difference in having somebody else there. I think the way that they have prepared the attack plans has been extremely good this year. I think it's made a huge difference who your catchers are, to be honest. I mean, Robinson Chirinos, even we saw this at the beginning of the year before Adley Rutschman even arrived. He is great at calling a game. And I remember the way that he worked with Jordan Lyles in the second game that the Orioles and Blue Jays played against each other this year. I mean, I think outside of there was one mistake in there to Matt Chapman. I think it was a home run. I can't remember what kind it was. But, you know, outside of that, he threw the ball really well and didn't make many mistakes. And I think that Adley Rutschman, too. I mean, he is great at calling a game. He's become one of the best blockers in the league. He's one of the best pitch framers in all of baseball. He does everything really well. But I think having better catchers has made a big difference for the Orioles this year and how they call a game, how they get pitchers through games. And, you know, you see it with Adley Rutschman. He's always greeting pitchers on his team as they leave the mound. And, you know, everyone believes that he's really in it with them. And I think with Robinson Chirinos, he's 38 years old. He's one of the oldest catchers in baseball, and he really knows how to call a game and to work with a pitching staff. And so I think that's made a huge difference as well, in addition to some of the other analytics and the way that Chris Holt and Darren Holmes have worked with the different Orioles pitchers to get them in the spot that where they need to be in. And I think it's just better pitch execution too. You're not seeing as much nibbling this year. And, you know, last year against Toronto, it happened constantly. Bad count here, bad count here. Suddenly you look and there are a couple of men on base and, you know, you'd be at the top of the Blue Jays order. And you know, it's sometimes you're covering your eyes a little bit, but that has been less common just because of how guys have gone about stuff this year, throwing more strikes, catchers setting up in the middle of the plate. And I think when our guys have learned be aggressive in the strike zone and attack the strike zone, the results have been there. And, you know, once they realize what those results were, they've stuck with it. And it's made for a pretty good year on the pitching staff side.
And a little bit more swing and miss stuff on the way, perhaps, to kind of add some versatility or variability to that staff. The Jays won't see him this week, but DL Hall got the call over the weekend. And I know that that's a guy, I mean, Dean Kramer too, to maybe to the same extent. But how cool is it, before we get into DL Hall, how cool is it for you to, you know, some of these guys, you were calling their games in High A Frederick, and now you see them getting to the majors and you're here with them calling the major league games.
Oh, it's so cool. And that's a great point. And I remember, you know, when I watched Trey Mancini playing in Frederick, and, you know, he hit his first home run over a Mudzilla, which is this big video board out in Little Zebulon, North Carolina, where it's a stop where it's easy to miss on the highway. But you know, he's not there anymore. But, you know, examples of guys like that are Ryan Mountcastle and Austin Hayes, and D.L. Hall was another one who I remember, you know, seeing him and kind of what he was like when he was younger than he is now. And he's still really young. I think it means a lot more. And you've kind of just seen how far these guys have come and how much they've developed from when they were young players, very much trying to figure it out, trying to understand what their approaches were. And you could see their batting practice and some of the things they would do in games. And you're like, okay, I think this guy's a major league player. But then they move up a couple of levels and they have their struggles there and eventually get to the major leagues. And as we know, the major leagues, especially the American League East, is pretty unforgiving. And to see what they've done to develop themselves as players, as men, as leaders, as all these different kinds of things, and to kind of just remember where they were 5 years ago, 6 years ago, whatever it was, it's kind of, you know, you walk in and you're kind of seeing what the fruits of their labors have kind of morphed into. And it's, you know, being part of the team that right now is knocking on the door of making the playoffs this year when most people predicted that they wouldn't have had any kind of chance to make it coming into this year.
Yeah, certainly, you know, the way I framed it early in the year when the Jays first played Baltimore was, you know, usually these young teams with young talent and a couple vets, they hit a stage where they're annoying before they're good. They're hard to beat, but you're gonna knock them off more often than not. And the Orioles seem to have skipped that step and they're just downright good now. I'm curious, I know you were on Fangraphs audio recently and this came up, but I would have to think Brandon Hyde is the favorite for manager of the year.
There's no question. I mean, I think that, you know, there's a lot of season left and we're not sure what's going to happen, but you know, to take this team, which lost 110 games the previous year, and to get them into the spot that he has now. I mean, the thing that I admire about Brandon is that last year, and I was here in 20, so it was my first year here. Even when they struggled, they always played for him. You know, they never gave up, and now they continue to never give up, and now they continue to win. So, you know, there's something about Brandon with you know, and I think a lot of it is because before he got this job, he had done so many different things. You know, he had been a farm director. He had been a minor league manager. He had been a coordinator. He had been a bench coach. He had been a first base coach. He'd worked with Joe Maddon. He was mentored by Jack McKeon. You know, he's been around so many of these, you know, great managers and coaching staffs, and he's been on major league teams, and he has worked with prospects and guys coming up. So he's pretty much seen everything that there is to see. And I think that it's given him the right appreciation and kind of the right mindset to handle this task. Because when he got in here, it was ground up rebuild, like blow it up, totally start over. And that's very hard to do in this division. And you know, the first year he was here, I mean, you'd watch the games, and I wasn't here at the time, but I was watching them from, you know, where I was doing minor league baseball. And you're just like, I don't know how he's going to get through this game tonight. And it's gradually kind of gone from that to the point where now he has some pieces, and now he has a bullpen that is one of the best in baseball, and he knows exactly how to use everything once he has what he needs, and he makes great decisions. And, you know, there's very few times where you second guess what he does, and he gives his team every chance to win. So I think with what he's done in the division where he's done it, in a year as well that, you know, we're coming out of a lockout and nobody knew what to expect coming into this year. And we have two new hitting coaches and, you know, all kinds of, you know, new players on your team and other kinds of things that have gone on where they couldn't even communicate with these guys. So for them to do what they've all accomplished, considering the circumstances leading into this year, I mean, I think that's just another feather in his cap and just another reason why he should be manager of the year.
No disagreement here. You mentioned that now that he has the pieces, there could be more pieces to come. I know Mike Elias spoke over the weekend about what the next steps are here and how much financial flexibility this team is built with, because yeah, some guys are going to get arbitration raises and stuff like that, but there's a lot of flexibility here. I know it's a little bit early for this, but if you're looking ahead to what takes this Baltimore team who could, I mean, look, they're young. They have so many good pieces still in the system. And I'd imagine this playoff push, whether they make it or not, is going to really help the development of some of these young guys. If you are Mike Elias in the offseason, you're looking to add to this group, what kind of things are you prioritizing to help them take that next step?
I think probably veteran players, probably some veteran pitching would probably be a big thing for me. You know, you have Jordan Lyles and, you know, I mean, just having somebody like him who has been in the major leagues and has more than 10 years of big league service time has been a huge difference maker. And, you know, you get all our young starting pitchers and, you know, outside of Jordan, I mean, nobody really had a full year in a major league rotation before. And, you know, our guys jokingly call him dad, and it's kind of funny. But I think that having some pieces like that in the bullpen to help you out, guys that you could push, you know, 3 days in a row, something that Brandon Hyde has been pretty careful about doing, and he's tried to avoid, you know, just because in the past, you know, when you're losing 110 games, that's not something that you want to do. But you also have a lot of young pitchers and a bunch of guys that you really value, and you want to be careful so that nobody gets overworked. I think to have some veterans in the bullpen, and I think also to have some, you know, some help in the starting rotation is going to be key. And to be able to have that to, you know, just we've seen the presence of Robinson Chirinos and, you know, Rougned Odor. I mean, a lot of folks at times he can drive them crazy because he'll make an error. And then, you know, like he did last week against Toronto, he hits a 2-run home run, which gives the Orioles the lead for good. But a guy like that who's so good in the clubhouse and, you know, Jordan Lyles who eats up innings. I mean, Orioles hadn't gotten a first half in terms of innings eaten by a guy like that since in the entire time where Brandon had been the Orioles manager. So I think to get some help and some veterans in the starting rotation, as well as some guys like that in the bullpen, I think that's really where it starts, because, you know, we have some talented offensive guys, but as we know, if you can't pitch, you can't win. And I really think having some additional guys and some older guys, you know, who can supplement some of the talented young guys we already have in our rotation, in our bullpen, I think that would make a huge difference.
Exciting times for the Baltimore Orioles. A little ahead of schedule and more than a little annoying for these Blue Jays as they try to make the playoffs here with 13 left against Baltimore. Jeff Arnold, play-by-play voice for Orioles Radio Network. Thanks so much for taking the time out, man.
Absolutely. Enjoy the series, and we'll see what happens over these next few days.
Thanks so much, Jeff. Jeff Arnold, play-by-play voice for the Baltimore Orioles on the Orioles Radio Network. Cool story there where he's come up through the Orioles system as well, not dissimilar to the voice of the Blue Jays on the Sportsnet Radio Network, Ben Wagner. Getting to see some of those, you know, Ben was with Buffalo, of course, and Jeff was with their high A team. A little bit more news for you. In addition to the George Springer activation and Bradley Zimmer being DFA'd, the Toronto Blue Jays will sign a minor league deal with Yoshi Tsutsugo. That comes according to Yuki Yamada of Sankei Sports. Not confirmed by the team yet, but that's something that could be adding a little first base slash DH depth to the system, to the minor leagues. He was with the Pirates for the bulk of the season. Had a 478 OPS, so spent last year between Tampa, the Dodgers, and Pittsburgh. Finished the year with a 689 OPS, and he was with Tampa the year prior to that. A guy who has some pop in the bat, guy who I'm fond of, because if you know me, you know I like to play out of the park baseball, which is like a baseball sim where you're just kind of in franchise mode. One of my favorite things to do is create an expansion team and do an expansion draft. And Yoshi Tsutsugo ends up on that roster pretty much every single time. And then ends up like, you know how an expansion team 4 or 5 years in, you look at their leaderboards and it's a bunch of guys who just happen to play there for long enough. That's Yoshi for my out of the park baseball expansion franchises. So cool to see him getting a minor league deal. He's a guy who, of course, came over from Japan a few years ago after a couple seasons as a, well, more than a couple seasons, but a long time as a big time home run hitter over there, regular for 20, 30, sometimes even 45 home runs over in Japan with Yokohama. So don't think that one's major league relevant unless a lot of stuff goes wrong, but there you go. Little, and who knows, maybe that's the additional depth if Bradley Zimmer gets claimed or doesn't want to go down to AAA Buffalo. I'm going to give you the Jays lineup here. As we do always in the last segment, we'll go a little deeper on the pitching matchups and how the lineups stack up against each pitcher, but because I have 100 seconds here before break. This is how the Jays line up. George Springer is back in the leadoff spot, back in the designated hitter spot. As Arden told us earlier, that's the plan, probably, to see him there a good amount. He's followed by Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Lourdes Gurriel Jr., Teoscar Hernandez, Bo Bichette, Matt Chapman, Raimel Tapia, Whit Merrifield, and Danny Jansen. So Jansen catches Yusei Kikuchi. Alejandro Kirk is the odd man out in the lineup. The bench today is Kirk, Espinal, Biggio, and Jackie Bradley Jr. Tapia gets the nod in center field while Merrifield plays second base. And then the only other note there, Lourdes Gurriel Jr. slides into the three spot where Alejandro Kirk normally hits because Springer's back. I would think the way this will get juggled the next little bit is Springer is obviously one if he's in the lineup. If he's not, Gurriel Jr. will be one. If he is, then it's Gurriel Jr. or Kirk in the three spot. Now, on merit, Alejandro Kirk could probably slide down a little bit. He hasn't been super great of late. And then I think, Teoscar Hernandez, Bo Bichette as the 4-5 is pretty much locked in. And then Matt Chapman, 6, unless a shakeup bumps him down to 7. So you're getting close to back to, you know, the top Jays offensive lineup. The Springer note from Arden Zwelling, though, makes it seem like maybe Alejandro Kirk DH days will be a little rarer moving forward, which, again, on merit alone, a little hard to argue with. I'm still a big believer in Alejandro Kirk. I still think the quality of plate appearance is there, but the results haven't been quite as much lately. hitting 200 for August. That's not and still a 1-to-1 strikeout to walk ratio. What a guy. Let's take a break. When we come back on the other side, we're going to have some fun. We're coming up on the 30-year anniversary of the Blue Jays winning the 1992 World Series. And we're at the longest part of the basketball offseason. Let's intersect the two. Let's talk to Tass Mellis of the No Dunks basketball podcast, who has been doing the No Bunts baseball podcast this summer. Tass Mellis, next on Jays Talk Plus on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
The smartest takes on the biggest stories in sports. The Fan Drive Time with Ben Ennis and Stephen Brunt. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. I'm Blake Murphy. Couple minor updates trickling in from the park. These come courtesy our pal Caitlin McGrath of The Athletic. Taylor Salcedo is in Toronto and playing some light catch. He's been pretty good in the minors as he works his way back up. Tim Mesa threw again today, but still not able to catch because of that separated non-throwing shoulder. Nate Pearson, for the first time since he strained his lat back in June, will throw a bullpen down at the complex on Wednesday. All of that is in addition to the news we passed on from Yuki Yamada before the break there, that the Jays have agreed to a minor league deal with Yoichi Tsutsugo. Speaking of people from The Athletic, our next guest is co-host of the No Dunks podcast, and in the offseason now, host of the No Bunts podcast. It's our good pal, Tass Mellis. Tass, how are you, buddy?
Blakey. I'm great. Great talking to you.
Oh, that was a very Jack Armstrong level Blake.
Yeah, actually, now that you say that, it felt Jack Armstrong like, but I'm pumped to talk to you. Yeah, we do No Bunts during the off season. I bring that up because I personally booked two guests today. While you are so big time, you've got your producers calling me to book me. So I'm just pumped for you that you're more of a big time host than I am, which is fantastic.
That is not true, big picture, but I'm glad. Yeah. JR, producer JR is excited. He said Taz is a big get.
That's great stuff.
And JR is a big basketball guy. So when I threw the idea out there, he was all over it. Taz, before we get into the baseball stuff, though,
yep.
Happy birthday.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. It is weird working on your birthday because you get a lot of happy birthdays. Yes, birthday is happening.
Excellent.
I'm old, man. It's happening. But yeah. Yes, as soon as this is over, this is how old I am. As soon as this is over, like almost immediately after going out for dinner, Eastern time zone, like 5-ish. Mm. My kids like eating early, but I'm going to get Korean. I'm very excited, almost as excited as I am to talk to you.
Well, that's great. I hope it's a good birthday. It's a lot of that around here lately. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know what's going on. Everyone's a Leo these days, apparently.
Out of the woodwork. It's true.
I think that's what sign it is right now. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Taz, one more.
The cold Canadian winters, Blake. Yes, that's what happens.
Exactly. So you've got No Dunks, and then you go No Bunts. I have one idea I want to throw by you for next offseason if you're bored, and it's a kind of old schoolish technical wrestling podcast called No Flips.
Oh-ho. Yeah, can you host it?
Yeah, I could come on at least. You can book me.
No. It's all yours.
No, but
the reins have been given to you.
In seriousness, though, I know you guys have a lot of fun with No Bunts, and everyone knows what No Dunks is. But what went into you wanting to do No Bunts? Like, just scratch the baseball fan itch a little bit?
Yeah, exactly that. Exactly. Just rekindling the baseball love that I've had for a long time. And it's been rekindled down here, being in the South, living in Atlanta, watching what the Braves did last year. And an appreciation for the game. I think the game has gotten, I don't know, it's appealed to me the last couple of years a little bit more. I don't know if I was going to say it's gotten better. It's probably just as good, but I have really enjoyed it. So yeah, it's scratching that itch. It's turning It's turning it into some content for the summer. And that's basically about it, because baseball was my first true love growing up in Toronto. I can admit that pre-Raptors, you know, when I was in my formative years. So yeah, it's that coming back around. And definitely I love the way the Braves, sorry, I gotta do the Alex Anthopoulos thing. What they've built down here, smart contracts, great personalities. The youngsters are coming up. Just when you were talking about the Jays moves and bringing up the youngsters, that potential anyways, some light catch being played in the Rogers Center. You know, that gets me excited. This time of year definitely gets me excited.
And, hey, good news for you. Ronald Acuna is returning tonight for your Braves. So there you go.
He was never going anywhere. No, but there's definitely some worries, some soreness, some George Springer-like soreness.
Yeah.
I see my man Eric Kareen chiming in saying that George Springer shouldn't be playing if he can't go all out and play center field. I don't know. I think you get Springer back in the lineup when you can, right?
Yeah. Well, I know what Eric is not saying specifically, but what he shook by, this is exactly what he said. I've seen players come back in the he can do this but isn't ready yet to do that status, and he's worried about it. He's talking about when Kyle Lowry played through the loose bodies in his wrist, I'm pretty sure. If you remember that season, I think it was 2018, where he played in the All-Star game and then needed surgery after. So I get the hesitation a little bit. So I didn't get to watch the No Bunts from last week, so I have to ask you for a spoiler here. You guys did the best closer entrance songs. Did you talk about what your closer entrance song would be? And if so, what would it be?
Well, first of all, no apologies necessary. Second of all, I thought initially because the song that you guys just came into the segment with, mm-hmm. A very Nelly-like song. I'm not sure who the artist was, but it sounded so much like Nelly.
So that verse was Murphy Lee, but that's a Nelly song.
Oh, that was
that's Batter Up. Nelly, Ali, and up. Murphy Lee. Yeah.
I'm an idiot. Yeah. That's why it sounded like a Nelly song. Cause it was a Nelly song. so I thought that you had listened to it, cause we didn't talk about closer entrance songs, but we talked about our plate appearance songs, coming to the plate songs.
Right.
So my song was Number One by Nelly. I am Number One, that song.
Perfect.
Yeah, so did you just set me up with that?
Like, no.
Somebody knew that.
No, I picked the songs to play people in. I was just like, what's a, you know, let's bring a fun, this segment was, the idea was for this to be fun. So, you know, it hasn't been the most fun of weeks around the Blue Jays.
Right.
So I was just trying to bring the energy up and you match it. This is just all nice. What's the word? Serendipitous.
Yeah. No. Wow. Yeah. That it is quite serendipitous. Yeah. I'm a Nelly guy through and through. So, yeah. That's exactly why it sounded like a Nelly song. Everything makes sense.
Tass, I know we're gonna talk some Jays history, a little bit of Jays trivia in a minute. And I know you're down in Atlanta, so you know you're more into the Spencer Striders of the world, maybe than the. Than the Jose Barrios of the world. But from afar, and I'm sure you keep an eye on the Jays still, is it a little odd to look at the standings and see the team in the top wild card spot and 9 games over .500, yet the conversation around them and the feel around them is pretty negative right now?
Totally. Totally. Listening to your Blue Jays talk from, I believe, Barrios' last game. It was yesterday. And then... you know, realizing every time I look at the standings that the Jays are in third in terms of the American League records. Yes, of course, that is totally opposite ends of the spectrum, but also so nostalgic because it just feels so Toronto. It just feels like the world is ending. You know, you look up and things, it could be a heck of a lot worse, but it's understandable that, that the Jays pitching staff hasn't performed up to expectations. But you mentioned I'm here in Atlanta and I'm not a baseball expert by any means, but I think of 12 months ago where the Braves were and how they turned things around from being a mediocre team to, you know, just getting hot, really, and turning things around. I think all the Jays need is, you know, one of those pitchers, you know, behind the top two that are, you know, carrying the team right now. You know, just one of them, whether it's Russ coming back, whether it's Barrios or Kikuchi, somebody. And then things are rosy again, right? Right, Blake? To me, that's how things look sitting from here.
You can get by with just three starters clicking. You can't get by with two. And you know what a good example of that is, Taz? The 1992 Toronto Blue Jays, where Wong.
Wow, Green, what a segue!
Yeah, I had to get us there somewhere. So you were a big Jays fan coming up. The 92-93 Jays, kind of your formative years. I imagine, like, if we went to the Mellis home in the GTA here, there are VHSs somewhere of the two World Series.
Yes, Oh Canada was definitely that brand that they made some money on way back then. Yeah, for sure. And I brought a lot of the junk down here. I call it junk. That's not great. But I brought it down here. It's even in our studio. We call it the Classic Factor. I put up a pennant. I put up some old baseball and hockey cards that my wife made into a beautiful art project. I brought it.
Amazing.
I couldn't let that stuff go. It was a big point of contention between Danielle and I, whether or not I would bring stuff down, but couldn't let it go.
All right. Okay, so first of all, the 30th anniversary of the 92 World Series is coming up. There's going to be, keep your eyes on the Sportsnet social channels and TV channels and stuff like that. There's going to be a lot of anniversary stuff coming ahead, and hopefully that means X players coming on Jays Talk Plus. But Tass, who was, I'll force you to narrow it down to one or two, your favorite player from that era when you were a kid?
That era, Pauly Molly.
Okay.
You know, he jumped on the second, just for the second one there. But I loved a good spray hitter. I guess I looked at myself as that, not as a power guy. So Pauly Molly, you know, played everywhere and was able to put it everywhere. So I still wear 19 in my weekend Warriors men's leagues for Paul Molitor's time with the Blue Jays.
Yeah. Who from the No Dunks crew is the best softball player?
Good question. I mean, I'll put myself up there.
Okay.
Trey can probably blast a ball or two, because I think that's what softball is. It's just putting your weight into the ball and going from there. Because it's not the guys who get on that get the credit in softball. It's just the guys who hit dingers, right?
Yeah, OBP's nothing in softball. It's slugging percentage only. And, you know, you might be a Paul Molitor guy. And who knows? Maybe you were even an analytics guy before you realized. You were like, well, the batting average on balls in play with this guy, he can really slap it around. I'm glad you mentioned that he's number 19, because I want to do some stuff with you about jersey numbers from that era. I've got a couple trivia questions prepped for you, okay?
All right.
So I'm going to start.
Hold on, Blake. As long as it's not like that question that you brought up on a recent show about, I think it was Bradley Zimmer was the subject.
Oh, where about how few plate appearances in a certain number of games. And
yeah,
because then you went back,
because I tuned in for specifically for that.
Yeah.
And you went back to the 70s and 80s with the Tim Johnson.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't get there, man.
No, I'm not going to do that to you. And that was one I never would have known that. I just, like, I tweeted it out today, actually, because Zimmer got the DFA treatment. He ends with 87 plate appearances in 75 games. No, all of these will be from 92-93.
All right.
But they are a little bit, some of them are tough. And the first one is tough because I wasn't sure if I would nail a segue as good as that rotation one. So this was going to be the segue instead. You host an off-season basketball podcast called No Bunts. But the 92 and 93 Jays teams bunted a pretty significant amount. Who, and I'm combining the years here, so who bunted the most on those teams? I'll give you a hint. As an analytics person, it's extremely frustrating to look back and see that this person bunted so much.
As an analytics person, I mean, my mind immediately goes so what does that mean? So that means there's a big bopper that bunted a lot?
Maybe not a bopper, but certainly someone too good to be laying down this many bunts.
Somebody. So somebody like Robbie Alomar? Is that
absolutely correct?
Yeah.
He had 10 sack bunts, and despite having an 867 OPS, that's like that's a middle of the order hitter, and you're asking him to put down, waste 10 plate appearances. Unbelievable.
You don't waste 10 plate appearances. Come on.
All right. So it's another Roberto Alomar one. In both playoff runs, so 92 and 93, he stole 8 bases both of those years. There are only 4 guys who have done that, who have done more than that in the playoffs before, in baseball in general. They were all from that era. I think you can get 3 of them. Maybe, I definitely think you can get 2. Think of 90s base stealers who stole more than Robbie Alomar in those years.
That's tough. Ricky Henderson?
Yeah, he had 11-1 playoffs.
Oh, man, the names are not flowing to the brain. I thought, I'm a Blue Jay man through and through. We can get there.
Yeah, two of them are Cleveland players from that era. One was just like one of the coolest guys. And there's actually, I'll give you a weird hint there, and this may throw you off more than anything. There's a basketball player who is his name Junior, but is not his son.
Kenny Lofton.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, no, that did not throw me off. That it all comes back to basketball.
Yes.
When you talk about whatever Eric Kareen is tweeting about, it all comes back to basketball for us. Okay, so just 2 more or 1 more?
There's 2 more, but I don't think you'll get one of them. The other
was one a St. Louis Cardinal? No. I mean,
I'm trying to double check if Vince Coleman? At the time he was no, this guy did not. Neither of them played for the Cardinals.
Okay, just give me a team. I'll get there.
So the other one of them is still Cleveland. That same era of Cleveland team. Wizard with the glove.
I mean, the only name that's coming to me is Carlos Baerga, but it couldn't have been.
No, other side of that double play tandem.
Oh, who was playing short? Sorry, I can't. I got nothing.
Omar Vizquel.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, he had 9, and then Davey Lopes was the other one that I didn't think we would get to. Okay,
thank you.
Paul Molitor, one for you.
All right.
He has the Jays franchise record with 12 RBIs in that 1993 playoff run. Which Toronto Blue Jay almost matched that in 2015? One RBI short of Molitor's franchise record.
Batista.
Yeah, there you go. All right. So we're going to go with the jersey number one now.
Yeah, okay.
Juan Guzman, over those 2 seasons, went 30-8. Just a ridiculous win-loss record. Even if we don't give pitchers credit for wins as much anymore, if you go 30-8, you are ridiculous.
Then he dropped off immediately after that, right?
I mean, yes. And soon one of the things he did to try to fix it was change his jersey number. What were his 2 jersey numbers as a Blue Jay?
The good years were 66. The bad years. Oh, I guess I blocked this out of my mind because I don't want to remember them. this is a guess. Was it a round number?
No, it was another kind of not a super common baseball number up in the, you know, the lineman numbers. It was 57.
Oh my God. I was going to say, okay.
You know what the craziest part is? It worked for 1 year. His first year wearing that number, he led the league in ERA, and then he went back to being bad.
Amazing. Wow.
It's, you got to change more than the jersey number, I guess, Tess.
Mm-hmm.
So you said you're number 19.
I'm number 19.
All right. That's a good one. I have a couple more for you, but they were the harder ones. I think we just move on from it and we take a look ahead. Okay. So the Jays didn't make a big trade deadline splash this year, but
sure.
In years past, particularly those 92, 93 years, you know, there tends to be, with any championship team in any sport, there's a guy who didn't play a big role necessarily or was a late addition or something like that, and then in the playoffs ends up being just crazy important. If you had to pick someone from the current Blue Jays to be that guy who, oh, you don't really think of him day to day during the regular season. And then down the line, it's like, wow, what a playoff legend. Who would your pick be from the current Blue Jays to do that?
That's a great question. It's probably a guy that should be thought of a little bit more often because he's a solid player, but I guess he's kind of flying under the radar. I think it could be Lourdes Gurriel.
Yeah, I like that one.
Yeah, it's just he's going to be there, and he's going to be producing like he has been all year, really. But yeah, for some reason, I mean, you can tell me why, but he hasn't been given the talk time, I think, that he deserves.
Oh, and you know what? It's not a terribly surprising pick now that I think of it, because if you're a Paul Molitor guy, obviously you're a big fan of a guy who can get bat to ball and hit it all over the park for average. And Lourdes Gurriel Jr. turning himself into an elite contact guy this year, hitting 308, and tonight he's in the three hole. So maybe the closest thing to your guy Molitor that they have right now.
Yeah, he can whip that bat around. Yeah, the contact rate, I'm sure, I'm probably never looked that stat up, but I'm sure that is ridiculously high for that guy.
Oh, yeah, big time. Tass Mellis, the contact rate on me having fun whenever I come on your show or you come on mine is 100%. Thanks for taking the time out on your birthday of all days.
Thank you so much, Blake, for having me on. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Tass. Tass Mellis of the No Dunks podcast, of the No Bunts podcast, of the big Leo birthday. Shout out to Ben Nicholson Smith, who had a birthday on Friday and worked it and didn't. I don't know if anyone knew. If you come across Ben, if you are posting nonsense in Ben Nicholson Smith's mentions today, make sure you wish him a belated birthday as well. You should always be posting nonsense in Ben Nicholson Smith's mentions. A couple more tiny news notes before we take a break and set up tonight's game. John Schneider said pregame that there were great reports on Julian Merriweather's rehab outing on Friday. I was keeping an eye on the box score on that one because Stripling also threw five shutout in that one, three hits, three Ks, no walks. Merriweather walked one, struck out two. Apparently the velocities were pretty good. So it sounds like he's getting close. Schneider also confirmed the report from Yuki Yamada that the Jays are close to signing Yoshi Tsutsugo to a minor league deal, a lefty first base slash corner outfield bat who hasn't had a lot of major league success yet, but maybe there's something there. I don't know that he factors in on the major league roster as anything other than maybe a September addition just to get a different look as a bat off the bench. But I think if he's playing any kind of time, things have gone awry. Let's take a break. When we go back and tee up tonight's game, we close the book on the Bradley Zimmer era in case this is it. We're going to take a look at Kyle Bradish, who you just saw, but we'll take a deeper look and we'll try to figure out which version of Yusei Kikuchi is showing up tonight. You can also hit us with text to 590-590. There's a bunch in there already, so I'll try to sort through those and answer a couple in the next segment as well as Jays Talk Plus continues on Sports at 590, The Fan.
Great daily gambling advice from JD, Blake, and Ailish in The Fan Morning Show's Wake and Rake. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Blue Jays Talk Plus. I'm Blake Murphy. Please don't make me feel like a disaster. A helpful lyric after a 1-4 week. I don't know if I want to do a whole week of shows if they keep playing that poorly. I have to. This is my job and I love it, but that'd be less than ideal. Three against the Orioles start tonight, 7:07, first pitch. Ben Wagner and Arden Zwelling on the call for you on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Blair and Barker have Jays Talk for you post game. This series, by the way, goes 7 o'clock tonight. Yusei Kikuchi against Kyle Bradish. 7 o'clock tomorrow, Alek Manoah against Dean Kramer. And 3 o'clock on Wednesday, a little getaway day with Ross Stripling against Austin Voth. That'll be Ross Stripling's return from the IL. So you'll see some sort of rotation or bullpen juggling as they clear a spot. George Springer's back tonight. We're going to get in the lineups and the pitching matchups momentarily. As several of our pals down at Rogers Center report, George Springer will initially be used as a designated hitter. He's only throwing from 90 feet right now. John Schneider said, and this is a quote that comes in via Shai Davidi, "We have basically another handful of days to build him up a little bit in terms of outfield stuff. It'll be kind of day to day and see how he's responding." So for right now, George Springer's your DH. Some other news that came down today: the schedules for the playoffs. And yeah, if you're a Blue Jays fan, it sure seems like your optimism that that'll matter to you took a hit over the last week. But right now, the Jays are in the top wildcard spot. If the season ended today, they would host a 3-game wildcard series here in Toronto. And I don't mean they host two and then go away for one. These are happening over 3 days, all in one location. So getting the top wild card spot is very important. Those games, by the way, are going to go October 7th, 8th, 9th. So the Jays will play until Wednesday, have one day off, and then jump right into a 3-game series. You'd hope that you don't have to change time zones, which you can control by winning the top wild card. You'd hope to have home field advantage, which you can control by having the top wild card. And you'd hope that in that wild card series over 3 games, that you'll have your very best pitchers on the mound. But guess what? If you haven't locked up a playoff spot Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday of that week, you don't have the luxury of giving a guy an off day here or juggling the rotation there to get your rotation lined up exactly how you want it. If you're the Toronto Blue Jays and you have Alek Manoah and Kevin Gausman, who you trust a ton, and a whole bunch of question marks after that, I would say there's a real urgency not only to lock up the top wildcard spot, but to get some cushion there so you can head into that final week of the season with the wildcard series in mind. One step at a time, sure. You can't manage a rotation for a playoff series that might not be coming, but it's something to keep in mind as you look at the standings over the next 6-7 weeks. A lot of standings watching. By the way, another ding for the Blue Jays here. The American League Championship Series. Look, this is champagne problems. If the Jays get to the ALCS and this problem comes up, things have gone pretty well. But you could conceivably play 5 consecutive days in that series. Do you trust 5 Blue Jays starters? Me neither. Maybe things feel different by October. Right now, you just got to get there. How the Jays will try to do that tonight is with Yusei Kikuchi on the mound. That feels like an odd transition because it's Yusei Kikuchi, but that's where they're at. And as Arden Zwelling told us earlier, how Yusei Kikuchi does tonight could inform what the decision is on Wednesday in terms of who comes off the roster for Ross Stripling. Does Mitch White move to the bullpen? Does he go to AAA to stay stretched out? Does Yusei Kikuchi go to the bullpen and Mitch White stays in the rotation? Do you burn through enough bullpen arms today that you have to make a subsequent move to get additional arms back there? A lot hinges on this. If you could get 2 earned over 5 from Yusei Kikuchi, I think you do backflips. I can't do one. Maybe you can. Either way, the bar is pretty low right now on what a successful start for Yusei Kikuchi looks like. He's been bad. He has a 5.13 ERA. That's half a run lower than Jose Berríos. And I do think that Kikuchi, until very recently, has gotten more heat than Berríos. But there are a couple reasons for that. One is that it seemed like Kikuchi, every time out, is rough for the most part. Berríos has had stretches where he puts together 3 very good starts or 6 pretty solid starts. Kikuchi, it's hard to find a time that he's been solid more than 2 starts in a row. So it's almost, would you rather a 2 earned, 2 earned, 2 earned, 6 earned or 4 earned, 4 earned, 4 earned, 4 earned from a pitcher? And I don't know. I think probably you'd prefer the Berríos side, as weird as that sounds right now, when he has the worst ERA among qualified starters in baseball. All the caveats that apply to that. 5.13 ERA. Component metrics that suggest Kikuchi should be even worse. He has a fielding independent pitching mark of 5.87. He has an expected ERA based on StatCast data, which takes into account walks and strikeouts and quality of contact, of 5.97. That's almost the worst expected ERA in baseball based on those StatCast metrics. He is almost dead last among pitchers in average exit velocity and barrels, which is how often a guy really squares up a ball. He has a very low chase rate. Guys don't swing at stuff outside the zone. Now, if you're looking for room for optimism, he's still striking guys out. He has a good whiff rate. Guys will miss at his stuff when he throws it well. But it's kind of a house of cards. It's fastball, slider, changeup. The changeup and slider can both be really good. But teams have not struggled with them as much if the fastball is not locating it. And we've talked a ton this year about locating the fastball and throwing it with more authority. And if you're talking about Yusei Kikuchi going to the bullpen at some point, you're going to need even more of that. Like, he's probably going fastball, slider out of the bullpen and just using that changeup as kind of the odd show me, or if he has a favorable count. The cutter should be abandoned altogether at this point, given what we know about it the last couple of years. Be interesting to see how this goes tonight. Kikuchi's faced the Orioles for 71 plate appearances, the active Orioles tonight, 71 plate appearances in his career. 3.72 expected weighted on base average. Again, that's the StatCast metric that looks at walks and strikeouts and quality of contact. That is not very good. That translates to about an expected ERA of 6. That's just against the Orioles. That's not overall. That's this team. Within that, Robinson Chirinos, Ryan Mountcastle, Austin Hayes, Anthony Santander have all had good success against Kikuchi. All small samples, as a lot of batter pitcher stuff is. And Chirinos isn't playing. But it's worth noting that three of those guys that are playing have had a pretty good time. Cedric Mullins and Rougned Odor have not had a very good time against Yusei Kikuchi. Yusei Kikuchi has monster platoon splits. Righties have killed him. He's been very good against lefties. Well, you're not going to see Rougned Odor or Cedric Mullins in this game. You're going to see Adley Rutschman as a switch hitter. You see Anthony Santander. No lefties in the lineup for the Orioles, I don't think. Taran Vavra, rather, is the lone lefty, and then a couple switch hitters in the mix. Here's how the Orioles line up against Yusei Kikuchi. Ryan McKenna leads off and plays center. Adley Rutschman, Anthony Santander, Ryan Mountcastle, Ramon Urias, Austin Hayes, Jorge Mateo, Taran Vavra, and Tyler Nevin rounds it out. Again, Santander, Mountcastle, Hayes have all had some decent small sample performance against Yusei Kikuchi, and the two guys on Baltimore Kikuchi's dominated are not in the lineup. Taran Vavra, the only lefty. Could be a tough one for Kikuchi. Could be a good one. Honestly, text in 590-590 right now if you think you know what you're getting out of Yusei Kikuchi start to start, because I don't. And that's not to say it's going to be negative. It means I don't know. Not sure which one it's going to be. By the way, that play the other week where Whit Merrifield got the out at home plate overturned because Gary Sanchez was blocking the plate, our pal Hannah Kaiser from Yahoo and MLB Network reports that the MLB sent out a memo saying they'd be enforcing that rule more strictly moving forward. So, not to rehash that argument, but the Jays were on the right side of it, I guess. Because MLB is going to enforce it more. Cool. Whit Merrifield, brain genius. Luis Rivera, brain genius. Changing the way rules are enforced. So that was the Orioles lineup. The Orioles are going to start Kyle Bradish, who you just saw. He gave up 3 earned over 5 1/3, 5 hits, 2 walks, 4 strikeouts just last week. You also saw him in mid-June where he gave up 5 earned over 4 1/3. Weirdly, the Jays don't have a ton of sample against him still at the individual level because he only went through the order twice and change in both of those instances. Jays have faced him for 45 plate appearances to the tune of a 321 expected weighted on base average. 325, rather, sorry. So that's an expected ERA of about 430. Nobody's had more than 6 plate appearances against him. Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Alejandro Kirk, Bo Bichette, Lourdes Gurriel Jr., all pretty good in a small sample. Kirk's not playing tonight. Raimel Tapia is 0-4 against him. He's the lone Jay with a straight-up bad sample. Tapia's in the lineup tonight. So we'll see how that goes. Again, 3 earned over 5 1/3 in not all that remarkable an outing last week. 5 earned over 4 1/3 in June. So Kyle Bradish, as much as he profiles as the type of guy who has given the Blue Jays fits this year, even though that doesn't make a lot of sense, Bradish isn't one who has had unreasonable success against the Blue Jays. Still, you would hope to get to him even more than like 3 over 5 1/3 last week is a good outing for Kyle Bradish. You need to get to him more than that. Now, he is just 25. He was the team's number 7 prospect before the season, but he is having a rough year. He has a 6.42 ERA. He has a 5.50 expected ERA based on all his StatCast numbers. He does have a decent ground ball rate, and he doesn't walk a ton of guys, but we're talking about a 22% strikeout rate. Not an elite bat missing guy. This is how Bradish profiles, by the way. He'll throw a 95-mile-an-hour fastball about 53% of the time. He works high in the zone with it, gets a decent whiff rate, but opposing hitters are hitting 360 against it. There's not enough movement and deception on that fastball to throw it in the zone as much as he does without it getting poked around the outfield. He also throws a slider that comes in about 86. Throws that 26% of the time, hammers it low and away to righties. Guys have hit it for average and a little bit for power, but some of the StatCast stuff suggests the power is a blip. Profiles more as a good contact pitch if you can get to it. Has a 34.3% whiff rate. By far, Bradish's best bet at inducing swing and misses, but guys have been able to find holes with it when they can get a bat on it. He'll throw a changeup to lefties, has a decent swing and miss rate, and by far his best contact numbers of any of his pitches. It's a ground ball machine. If you are a lefty facing Kyle Bradish, you are going to roll over that changeup and put it on the ground. That's the most certain thing in Kyle Bradish's profile. And then he'll throw a curveball to either side, but he's pretty prone to losing the location on that. And if he catches the meat of the plate with that, good luck. It's not a great curveball right now. Here's how the Jays will line up against Kyle Bradish. Try to get the bats going. George Springer returns, leads off, and is designated hitter. As we've noted a couple times throughout the show, that's the plan right now. Springer's going to DH for at least a few days while they work his arm back for throwing. Bradley Zimmer, designated for assignment in a corresponding move. Springer will be followed by Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Lourdes Gurriel Jr., who's in the 3 spot because A, Springer's back, and B, it's an Alejandro Kirk off day. Gurriel's followed by Teoscar Hernandez, Bo Bichette, Matt Chapman, Raimel Tapia hitting 7th and playing center field. He's the lone lefty in the lineup. Whit Merrifield and Danny Jansen. Whit Merrifield playing at 2nd as Espinal and Biggio are both on the bench alongside Alejandro Kirk and Jackie Bradley Jr. Jackie Bradley Jr., now your extra bench outfielder. You could put Espinal and Biggio there too, sure. You could bump Merrifield there, but this is about it. I think the top 6 that you have in there tonight, Springer, Guerrero, Gurriel, Hernandez, Bichette, Chapman, those 6 are going to be in there pretty much every day, so much as their load management and things like that allow. Then you're going to make the decision between Tapia, Merrifield, Jackie Bradley Jr. for center, You're going to make the decision between Merrifield, Biggio, and Espinal for second. And you're going to make the decision between Jansen and Kirk for catcher. Kirk's probably not completely out of DH days, but for right now, they're going to prioritize that spot for George Springer. And that's fair enough because Alejandro Kirk has not been hitting at Alejandro Kirk level of late. A WRC plus of just 57 so far in August. So he's been about 57% as effective as an average hitter this month. Small samples for sure. And the approach is still strong. He's still walking a lot. Still works good plate appearances. But if you're looking for someone who loses plate appearances right now because George Springer's back, Kirk has a better case to lose plate appearances than Lourdes Gurriel Jr. or Teoscar Hernandez, for sure. And they're going to try to work Whit Merrifield in because they want him getting used to it. And they want him getting in the mix at second base and in the outfield. Should be, I'm hesitant to say fun series because if it goes poorly, I don't think it will be for Jays fans. But it should be an intense one. The Jays have a good chance to get the bats going given what the Baltimore pitchers are like. And that's not an opinion exclusive to Toronto or the show. We had Jeff on earlier, Jeff Arnold, the Orioles play-by-play voice on the radio side. He said about the same thing. If there's something to worry about with the Orioles, it's the starting pitching. It's the fact that the Jays scored 11 runs off them early in the year, and it didn't seem like a blip at the time. The Orioles have done a good job against the Jays, though, limiting them to 5 runs or fewer in 4 of the 6 meetings. Jays got to get it going because that lead in the wildcard race is almost nil. Half game up on Seattle, game up on Tampa, and 2.5 up on Baltimore, who are the last team out. 3 up on Minnesota and Chicago. Half up on Cleveland if they were to lose the AL Central lead. It's very, very tight right now. Before we close it out and kick it over to Fan Drive Time, we got a few texts in the text line throughout the show. Tyler from London asks if it would make sense to move to a 6-man rotation to give guys a blow and keep some innings, like for Alek Manoah down. Tyler, it could. I would be more of an advocate for that if there weren't so many starters who were pitching poorly or not good bets to go past 5 innings. If you are going to a 6-man rotation, let's assume Manoah and Gausman can go 7 every time and everyone else can go 5. Well, that means even if you structure your rotation in a certain way, you're needing 2 bullpen innings and then 4 bullpen innings and then 4 bullpen innings and then 2-4-4, and you'd rotate like that. Back-to-back 4-inning days a couple times a week is a pretty big tax on the bullpen, at least until September when you get the extra arms back there. I could see that playing out this week where you don't want to bump Mitch White necessarily. You want to keep him stretched out. You want to get Alek Manoah the extra off day, and then you have an off day next week as well, and that lets you kind of reset things and lay it out more methodically. But I think with any sort of term, no, I don't think we'll see that more than once in a while. AJ in Brampton asks if I think Ken Giles could be a good fit for the Blue Jays bullpen. I keep seeing mixed reviews on Twitter. There are mixed reviews because Giles is available. And if you're available in the middle of August, something has gone wrong. In Giles' case, Seattle has a really good bullpen. He was struggling to find the strike zone a little bit. And he hasn't been very healthy the last couple of years. If we're talking about the Yoshi Shutsugo deal, where it's a minor league deal, and I assume, hey, if he's not called up in X number of days, he can elect for free agency, something like that. Absolutely. Kick the tires on him. See what he's got. See if the control can come around with more innings. You need bat missing stuff. But Giles' velocity is down and he struggled to throw strikes in the tiny window we saw him in. So I would want the ability to get a look at him at AAA before you committed to anything. This person didn't sign theirs, but they asked if I was at the Beth show last night. I was not. I'm sorry. And if I was there, I hope you would have said hi if you saw me. But no, I was not. Luke from Brantford thinks pitchers are using sticky stuff again and baseball just doesn't care about it. Maybe Merriweather will become a welcome addition to the bullpen. Yeah, here's the other thing from that, Luke. Funny but not entirely unserious comment that I heard when Mike Petriello and I had talked about Matt Chapman's kind of tough time throwing the ball on occasion this year. Someone pointed out that, yeah, when there's no sticky stuff on the ball for the pitcher, there's no sticky stuff on the ball for the fielder. Maybe that's something there. Andrew Mississauga asks to a point earlier when I said, do you trust five starters for the Blue Jays if they have to play 5 days in a row? Andrew asks, does any team trust five of their starters? I would say maybe Houston and the Dodgers, but that's about it. I think those teams, playoff teams, teams that'll be in the ALCS, though, at least trust four. Maybe the Yankees don't at this point. I don't know. They're a disaster lately. The disaster on pace to win a million games still, but they have had a tough time recently. Maurice from Orangeville asks, what percentage do the Jays have to win down the stretch to make sure they actually qualify for a wild card position at this point? I don't have a good answer for that because, I mean, technically they are at 540 right now and they're the top wild card team. So we would project all of those teams to be some like a 540 right now has you in. So you don't have to play significantly better if the rest of your opposition play at the same level. It depends so much on what everyone else is going to do. I will say, however, that if we can look at the Fangraphs playoff odds to get an idea of it. The Jays, by the way, still have a 91% chance by those playoff odds to make the playoffs. That feels high. That feels high. The cutoff right now for the playoffs looks like it'll be about 85 wins based on Fangraphs projections, which would mean the Jays got to win 24 the rest of the way. I'm trying to figure out the percentage in quickly. Actually, so based on that, the Jays would only have to play 500 ball the rest of the way. But again, the Fangraphs projections are just that. They're projections. They're the average outcome. You're certainly not comfortable with that. I think if you won 29 the rest of the way and got to 90 wins, you'd be really happy with that. 29 and 20 the rest of the way. Does that feel too unrealistic? That's close to a 600. That might be aiming too high. It's a good question, though, and we'll keep an eye on it. We'll continue to monitor it. We also have some people sending in their Kikuchi predictions. I will check those tomorrow and see if any of you were right. Glenn from Pickering thinks they're going to play poorly tonight. Glenn from Pickering is suggesting that it's going to go the other way, and everyone's expecting poor things from Kikuchi, so of course it'll go well. We'll see how that goes. Yusei Kikuchi takes on the Baltimore Orioles up against Kyle Bradish. George Springer returns, leads off, designated hitter. That's the big item for tonight. 7:07 first pitch, Ben Wagner with Arden Zwelling alongside him. Blair and Barker will be back for Jays Talk after the game. Jays Talk Plus will be back here tomorrow, 3 to 5. Thank you to producer JR and Derek behind the glass. Thank you to Arden for coming on. Jeff Arnold, play-by-play voice of the Orioles. And our pal Tass Mellis, the old birthday boy from No Dunks. Fun show today, given that the Jays had a disaster of a weekend. Hopefully, there are better days ahead. Have a wonderful Monday. Jays Talk Plus, back tomorrow on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.